to speak, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Rachel.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm an addict. I was sitting up here praying, and one of the things I do when I'm really nervous or stressed that I've learned here is to pray, is to like get out of my head for a second and just ask God or my higher power to like help me with whatever. And what I've continued to do really today, because I start sharing the meeting in my head, I start thinking about the topic and going through it, you know. And like what I kept coming to me when I would pray is that this is not about me. This is about carrying the message that was so, so, so freely given to me. I mean, it really makes me choke up, man, because like this program is just available to us. We just go to a church, we go to a wherever, we sit in a seat, and these people just share their lives, their feelings, their vulnerability, and it helps me stay clean. So when asked to do something like this, I say yes, unless there's, you know, a legitimate reason not to do it. So it's not my favorite thing, guys, but I'm gonna give this my best shot. So work the steps or die, right? I when I think about that topic, I remember being in a treatment center and the meetings would come in and we would have all these groups, and you know, one of the very hard, like raw, hardcore messages that I remember hearing very early on while I was in treatment was change you must or die you will. And that like stuck in my head. And at the time, you know, it seemed a little extreme. It seemed a little like death wasn't really something that scared me. It was never, I don't think a lot of addicts, but I certainly didn't use heroin and think to myself, oh, I'm scared this one might kill me. That just was, I wanted to just get high. It didn't matter. The consequences didn't matter. So dying was never something that like got my attention. If someone said to me, you're going to die if you don't do this, or if you do this, or what, you know, that didn't get through, especially in active addiction. I just was, you know, it was just about the next one. So, when I heard that early on in recovery, it wasn't something that I still had the same mindset, like, oh, I'm not going to die, like, you know, just sort of in this very arrogant way, just thinking like, you know, I knew it all, really. That's really what I thought. I don't think I came across as like a know-it-all or like a, you know, a egotistical person, but I certainly was of the mindset my entire life that I had it figured out how I needed to be and what I needed to do to get through life. And I really wasn't open to much else. Legal authorities, parents, friends, anyone that told me to stop doing something or do something different, I really never really was, I don't know. I just thought I knew better. And so when I got here in 2008, and I was in treatment in 2007. I was in jail, went to treatment, and treatment's not NA, man, but like NA came to treatment. NA showed up in treatment for us, and they share these messages, right? And I remember the steps, you know, people would talk about these steps and all these words and these on these like charts on the wall, and it would say God, and it would say amends, and it would say inventory, and I just was like, this is, I don't know what any of this is, but like I was in jail, I did heroin, I got arrested, now I'm in this treatment center, and I don't know what all this is and what it has to do with the rest of my like path, my life, and I just didn't know anything, but I thought I knew it all. And you know, the message of NA was so simple back then for me. It really was just pray, go to meetings, and don't pick up. And so that's where it started for me. I prayed. I started praying. Didn't know what I was doing, but I just started doing it. I went to meetings, and I didn't do any drugs. And that was, like, really a big deal. All of that changed so many aspects of my life. But what it didn't change is the inside of me. It sort of helped me stop doing some of the behaviors that I needed to do to get drugs, but it really didn't change how I was thinking, right? There was really nothing internally changing at that point. And so the step work process for me and the idea of like change, I must, die, I will, right? Work the steps or die. I mean, that is, as I look back at these last 17 plus years, I mean, there has been no point at which I didn't need to change something in my life. And I don't change by like willpower, I don't change. I can change for a day. I can try to do something different that day. But like, unless I really turn something over to God and like really allow myself to go through a spiritual change, like it doesn't really last, right? And I don't know any other way to do that than the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. I mean, that really is what has transformed the way that I thought. So when I first got clean, like if you can imagine like what we all look like when we first get clean in terms of like being able to be an open, honest, vulnerable person, it was like the walls of my like heart were like all the way up to the sky. I mean, brick wall. Like there just wasn't any infiltrating my emotions, my heart, who I was, like I just was this wall, right? And I learned to play the part. I learned to say the things that people wanted to hear, and I knew how to respond, and I knew how to like focus on other people and do all these things to keep people from like really knowing what was behind the wall. At this point in my life, having been to jail and all these things had happened, like I didn't even know what was behind the wall at that point. I can tell you now that what was behind the wall was a little kid, a scared, anxious, insecure, feared up little child. That's what was behind the wall. But at the time, like, you know, I was 26 years old. I was, you know, I had cornrows in my hair when I got out of jail. So I was just like this very like, I didn't know who I was. I was dating men. I'm not straight. Like I attracted to women, but that was not part of what I was willing to like admit at the time. And like, I was just walking around like in this like survival walled off mode, right? And so I get this sponsor who, I don't know, she was just safe. Like she was the most like her tone was always the same. It was always like light and nice. And it was just very like, there was no threat. There was no, like, I wasn't scared she was going to judge me. I wasn't scared of what she was thinking about me. Like she was real simple. And I started working the steps, man. And they had these books, right? The step working guide and the basic text, and just started reading. And like, you know, I don't remember the first three steps. I don't remember like the actual like process very well right now, like when I think back that far. But what I do remember is what started changing in my life. Like I don't remember sitting down with the step. I remember my four step and where I was, but I don't remember exactly where I was when I did 1, 2, and 3 with that first sponsor. But I remember starting to notice things in my life changing because of those sitting down with the sponsor things. And I didn't understand how like writing in this book, the answers to like, what are you powerless over? What do you, you know, like I didn't understand how that was going to change my life to the point where I could not do heroin anymore or not even want to do heroin anymore. Like it didn't connect to me, but like people were doing it and they were talking about these steps and how they got a sponsor and they worked a step. And so I did what other people were doing. Really, mostly I wanted to just fit in and be part of and not feel like outside of like the group really. But that was enough to motivate me at the time. Right. So I remember the things that started changing were what I did when no one was watching. That started changing. I started noticing that like I didn't feel good doing the wrong thing just because I could get away with it. That started changing within a few, like pretty quickly. And like probably the first 6 months, like there was multiple things that would happen that like, I have this like memory of being in treatment and working with a sponsor and like starting this little process. And like, there was no point in making my bed. Never in my whole life had I thought about the point. Like my mom would tell me to make my bed, never made my bed. What is the point of making my bed? And I just started making my bed and in treatment because it was required. I would get in trouble if I didn't. And then I lived in a recovery house. And so, like I said, I'm working with this sponsor and like, oh, like my life is unmanageable, all this stuff. How does that, what does that have to do with life? I don't know at this point yet. I really don't. But what I did know is that like, I felt a tiny bit better when I did the right thing, even though nobody at the recovery house was watching whether we made our bed or not. I just started making my bed. And like that started translating into these other things that would happen, right? Like I would tell the truth when I could get away with a lie, right? Or I would answer the phone when I didn't want to, right? Or I would call the person that I knew could help me even though I didn't want to. And not only would I call them, but I would tell them the truth about something, right? I wouldn't just say, oh yeah, everything's fine. I would say like a little bit of what like was bothering me that day, just a tiny bit, right? And this whole transformation started happening, and I really didn't understand, again, like what does this have to do with the step work, right? So what I learned in the third step is that like, the way that I thought all the time, my whole life, the way that I didn't even know there was a different way to think. I didn't even understand that there was a way to get out of my own way, to stop listening to my own thoughts, and turn my will and my life over to the care of something bigger than me. And at the time, it was really just sponsorship and the program. It was like what people were saying to me. I would pray, but I don't think I really felt a connection with anything bigger than me, other than the NA program at the time. And then I did my four step, and I had been so filled with like self-hatred and shame and guilt and like just all the feelings of like everything's wrong with me, right? Like everything I've done is so bad. Everything about me is so bad. Like I'm gay. Like that's going to be like, you know, I don't really even want to look at that. I don't want to acknowledge that, like all this stuff. And so I told my sponsor at the very end of my four step, you know, there's like a question about, did you not tell, is there something in here that you didn't tell your sponsor? And I told her, I was like, yeah, I was with this. I was like, I don't know why I didn't write this, but like I was with a girl when I was in jail. And she's like, oh girl, me too. I don't know. And she just like was like, it was nothing to her. To me, it was like the weight of the world was like I was holding when I told her this, right? And so the steps like had started to get me to a place where I was willing to tell, like, for me, a big truth, right? And it was not a burning bush moment, but like emotionally, like that set the stage for like my recovery to like really change. Like I really started learning, like, oh my God, like parts of who I am that I hated or that were dark and in the shadows, like I started like letting them into the light, like a tiny bit at a time. I mean, painstakingly slow, but like it happened, right? And I look back and I'm like, that fourth and fifth step, that first one, like really, really was like a pivotal like crossroads in my recovery. Because there's those moments when like, do I tell the thing or do I not, right? Do I like make that phone call or do I not? Do I get up and go to the meeting or do I not, right? And all of those steps in their own way. Do I write on this defect? Do I write this part of the defect that I really don't even want to admit to myself, much less say to my sponsor when we go over it, right? And so I get to six and seven and I'm like, I had gotten a new sponsor at the time, and like, I just remember this list, this really cool thing she did. She wrote this list of the spiritual principles that were the opposite of the defects, right? And I was like, it made me feel like there was a way out of the pain. Like there was a way out of like all this stuff I had been doing to like not feel and like not deal and like not feel scared and not, you know, like try to control everything, try to please everyone, whatever, all these defects, right? There was these other spiritual principles that I could do instead, right? And so like this lighter, like my spirit just kept getting lighter, right? Because the seventh step allowed me to like lean into those spiritual principles, like ask God to help me, like, God, please help me not act out on jealousy today. Please let me not, you know, whatever the defect was that day, right? And like really be true and authentic to myself, right? And then I get to the eighth and ninth step, man. And by this time, like, I maybe had like 2 years clean, maybe a little less. And like, it was this transformation of not just like, I can talk about myself and who I really am, but it was also like, it was like this being in this space in the world where like, I didn't feel locked within myself. Like I didn't feel this like prison anymore. Like, and the biggest thing of all was that I didn't think about doing drugs regularly at all. I mean, it was not something that like never crossed my mind, or if I heard someone talk in a meeting about XYZ, it didn't like trigger memories and be like, oh man, that euphoric recall, whatever. But like, I didn't live in this grips of obsession and compulsion anymore, man. And I don't know why the steps helped that, but they did for me. So I get to eight and nine, and I remember like there was so much weight of like the self-hatred, the deeper self-hatred lied there for me. It was parts of myself that I didn't like, but the real pain was like how I treated others, especially those that were closest to me. Like that's the stuff that really left me feeling so bad about myself. Like I was just this bad daughter, this bad sister, this bad person, right? And I remember sitting at the table with my parents. We went to a pizza joint, and I couldn't eat. I was like, you know, it was weird that I asked them to go to dinner. And I remember doing my ninth step. I remember like the process of like sitting with them, and they had this look of like, you know, my parents are not emotional people. They're very uncomfortable with emotions, actually. But they, my mom had this look of love. I remember that. My dad just looked uncomfortable. But my mom looked like, you know, just like waiting for, because they knew I was something. Something was happening at this dinner. It wasn't like a normal, I don't ask them to go out to dinner, like at that point in my recovery, especially. So, you know, I just said what you say, man. I said, I'm just so sorry for all the pain I caused you, whatever I said. And, you know, they didn't want anything from me. They didn't want me to pay the money back or, you know, do all the stuff. They just wanted me to stay clean, right? And, like, I don't think in that moment I really let the freedom, like, fully, like myself fully feel that. But, like, it really started, like, showing. Like, I just didn't walk around, like, looking down all the time and, like, not being able to look people in the eye. Like, I just started feeling this feeling of, like, well, maybe I'm, like, not the worst person in the world, right? And then the last three steps, really, for me, like, 10, 11, and 12 are, like, that's like PhD freedom. That's like, if I can stay connected to God, if I can stay in a space where I'm not feeling shitty about something I did earlier that day, or if I do feel shitty about something I did earlier that day, I'm going to make an amends quickly, right? I'm gonna repair it. I'm going to do something to make it right. I'm not consistently acting out on character defects, or if I am, I'm like, you know, addressing that, talking to my sponsor, praying, whatever it is. And 11 was really just about maintaining contact with, at that point, was just God. I just call it God. I still call it God. I don't know what it is even. I just know it's not me. There's something bigger that's guiding my life, right? There's something that took away this desire to use. It was not me. I did not willpower myself away from wanting to do heroin, because if it was up to me, I would want to be high in this moment. Like, truly, like, that feeling is, like, the best feeling. But the other best feeling, right, the organic, real, authentic best feeling is the freedom that I've gotten here, right, is when I feel so connected to God and so in the right place, right, where I can take in the moments of, like, the dog, like, wagging his tail when he sees me, or the kids smiling, right, and playing, and, like, my wife, like, loving me, and just all the stuff that, like, life has to offer, right? Like, if I can feel that and take that in and be present, like, that is the good stuff, right? But the problem with this disease for me is that, like, I don't think I would die right now if I stopped working the steps, but I think eventually I would be so miserable that I would either use or want to die. That is, I like know that without a shadow of a doubt, right? And so the steps have gotten me to a place where I don't feel like I want to die. Like, I feel like connected. I feel like okay in my skin most of the time. And that doesn't mean that every day feels good, because it doesn't. It really doesn't. Life is so hard and painful sometimes. Like, it is not like a walk in the park, right? But the actual feeling of, like, wanting to live no matter what I'm going through. My mom just got diagnosed with cancer a few months ago. Like, she's going through all of that. And, like, the desire to live and go through that and show up is, like, so huge, right? Like, I don't want to recoil and go away from it. I want to, like, show up, right? And that's not because, like, I'm just this big, you know, brave whatever person. It's because, like, I've done enough work where, like, I know I will be okay. I know I will be okay with or without my mom alive, truly. I will not be okay, you know, for a while. But I know that if she doesn't make it and she doesn't get through this, that it's still going to be okay, right? And that is because of this program. That is because of the steps. That is because, like, I have to trust that the God of my understanding and, like, the power that helped me get clean, that helped me get to jail so that I could get clean and so that I didn't die, is going to help me through everything. And it has so far, right? Not just God, but, like, the people here, right? My sponsor, my network, like, prayer, step work, like, all of the things that have kept me here, right? And so all I have for this program is gratitude. My wife gets annoyed because I just love NA. I love meetings, and I, like, drag her to meetings, and she's, you know, everyone has their program, but, like, meetings really work well for me, right? Because it's where I'm reminded of the principles. It's where I'm reminded to, like, oh, yeah, I got to pick up my step work. Oh, yeah, I got to pick up my step work. Like, that's just, like, I need a lot of reminders of that, right? But when I think about what the steps have done in my life, I just went over a step one with my sponsee the other night, and, like, it just reminded me, like, wow, like, the surrender that is the principle, one of the principles in step one, and the ability to, like, got it. Is that you?
No.
Okay. The principle of surrender, she looked up the definition, because one of the questions, she was working out of a, it doesn't matter. One of the definitions she looked up of the word surrender was cease resistance, right? Cease resistance. And the whole steps, 1 through 12, for me, are all about ceasing resistance. Like, stop fighting. Stop trying to do it my way. Let go. Tell the truth. Be honest. Do the next right thing. Be vulnerable, you know. And really, like, it all starts with that first step. It all, like, there is no way through the steps without that initial surrender. And so I continue to try to practice it. I'm not perfect. I show up when I'm asked to, though. And I truly believe I would not be alive if it was not for the 12 steps and this program. So that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Introduce our next speaker, Conrad.
Hi, family. I'm an addict, and my name is Conrad.
Conrad.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you. God, so much that Rachel talked about I could identify with. You know, I got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in 2001. I've not been clean since 2001. But what I realized when I got here in 2001, I heard everybody talking about the steps. One of the things I heard was the 1-2-3 shuffle. And I didn't understand it, so I asked a couple of questions. And they told me it's people that work steps 1, 2, and 3 and use before they get to 4. I'm like, all right, so what's this fourth step about? And they said it's about you getting honest with you. It's like, really? I didn't want to hear that. Now, for me, what I realized years later is when I came into the rooms in 2001, I sat here and I raised my hand. I said, I'm an addict and my name's Conrad. That was the first admittance that I ever said that I was an addict. Now, I knew there was something wrong with me, but I didn't think I was an addict. An addict is that junkie in the gutter with a spike in his arm. That's what I grew up with the mentality of. They didn't have a house. They didn't have anything in their lives but that needle in their arm. All my problem was is I smoked crack for 7 days a week. That's a problem, I think. I came into the rooms and there were men and women who were here when I got here that showed this person, this addict, love before he can even begin to understand how to love himself. They told me to come in, sit down, sit up front. This is where the sick people sit. So when I go to a meeting, I do my best to try to get as close to the front as I can, even till today. Because I have a short attention span. If I sit back there, somebody comes in the door, I'm looking at the door. If somebody's starting to whisper to their friend, I want to hear what they're saying. Where my focus needs to be is on the speaker. Because I may miss something that may save my life. My first sponsor, a lot of people knew him, a lot of people didn't like him. But he kept the step work very simple for me. I don't have a very high education. I can read, I can write, and do all that. But when it comes to doing step work, I look at it as homework. And back then, I didn't want to do no damn homework. I already went through school. But my sponsor explained it to me. He says, this is what's going to help you get better. And he put me on my first step, and I didn't do nothing with it. For almost 2 years. And guess what happened in those 2 years? I got high. All the old timers around here used to say, work the steps or die, motherfucker. Still didn't want to do it. 2003, February 2nd of 2003 is my clean date. It's when I fully surrendered to the process and this program. As soon as I saw my sponsor, he says, you ready to start work? It's like, yeah. Put me on my first step. And it was freeing to be able to admit to myself and say that I am an addict. And to find out that being an addict is not a bad thing. It's really not. It just means I have a problem with life. Because I wasn't just addicted to drugs. I was addicted to lifestyles, clothes, you name it. I had an addiction to it. And it allowed me to see that for the first time, that maybe, just maybe, I'm not as bad as my mind and the voices in my head tell me that I am. Because I don't know about anybody else, but there was a lot of voices up here that always told me I wasn't worthy. I wasn't lovable. You're not going to get caught. Don't tell them the truth because you'll get in trouble. You know, speaking of lies, like you were talking about, the biggest lies that I believed were the ones that I told myself. You know, the lies I told everybody else didn't mean nothing to me. It just got me out of trouble for a little while. Because I don't care how long you tell a lie, eventually it's going to come to light and you're going to have to pay the consequence for it. You know, admitting that I was powerless over the disease of addiction was a big step for me. Because I could start looking at myself in a different light. The first time I came around in 2001, I realized afterwards that I had started working the steps. Because I came in, you talked about not looking at the ground. That's all I could do was look at the ground. I couldn't look anybody in the eye because I was ashamed of who I was and what I had become. And I looked at the ground. And it took about 6 months, 6-7 months, for my eyes to go to the ground to look at somebody in the eyes. You know? Honesty was not a big part of my life. I told you what I thought you wanted to hear. Because one of my biggest character defects is people pleasing. And it can be today if I'm not aware of it. I did that my entire life, was to tell people what they wanted to hear, do what you wanted to do, just so I could fit in with you. And when I surrendered to this process, everybody told me, well, who's Conrad? I don't know. They're like, you don't know who Conrad is? I'm like, it's me. No, who is Conrad? Do you know anything about him? Do you know what he likes? Do you know what he doesn't like? I didn't know anything about myself. And I started this process and I started looking at myself. And in my second step, I relied on my home group, my small network, the men and women who reached out to me to help start telling me about me. And sometimes when they were telling me about me, I wanted to punch them in the face. Because I didn't like what they were telling me. Because a lot of what they were telling me was true. I was being dishonest. I was still lying right to their faces. And they knew. It's amazing that what I know now is when a newcomer comes in, you ask them questions, how quickly they are to lie to you and tell you things that they think you want to hear. And I just look at them and smile and go, there I go. I attract the ones that are just like me. So I relied on the group to help guide me. And it brought me to a God of my understanding. Now, I came into the rooms knowing of God. I was raised Catholic and all that good stuff. And I was told if I sinned, I'm going to hell. So I didn't want a God of my understanding. I didn't want a God because if I'm going to hell, what's the sense of having one? They told me, God of your understanding can be something that is more powerful and greater than you are. Said, your disease was your God for the longest time. You have the choice now to change it. To have one that's loving, caring. What's the best for you? Kind of blew my mind. Because for so long, I believed I was going to hell. Because the God that I grew up with. Today, far from it. Far from it. You know, I made a lot of mistakes in my life. And in my fourth step, I was able to take a look at them. And what I realized about the fourth step, what a lot of people don't like about it is they don't like taking a look at themselves. Fourth step is everything that you've ever done. So what if you see it on paper? Now you got to face it for real. To me, that's what the fourth step was. Putting it on paper and facing it for the first time. I know what I did. But up here, I can change every little aspect about the outcome, and justify it, rationalize it in my head. But as soon as I put it on paper, when it's on paper, it's real. And after being here a while, what I had on paper? No, I wasn't as bad as my disease was telling me. Because I listened to the men and women who told their stories, shared their experience, and I was nowhere near like some of them. Now, I'm not saying that I'm better than, but what that did is it helped me to be able to take a deeper look at myself and say, hey, you are a good person. You are a caring person. You're a loving person. You're a good father. You're a good husband. You're a good son. You know, I was able to share this with my sponsor, and some of the stories that he told me, the things he did, I'm going, what? Really? You know, I always looked at my life as being the worst thing that anybody could do to society. And my disease pounded on me every day, telling me that I was no good, that I was worthless, that nobody wanted me around. Your daughters don't want you. Your wife doesn't want you. Your mother and father don't want you around. And I realized a long time ago, my disease talked to me too. Growing up, my entire life, my disease was there, and I didn't know it. It told me I didn't fit in. And I always share this. I was a little boy on the street. Now, my hair used to be really blonde and really curly. I was the male version of Shirley Temple. And I hated myself. I didn't want to look in a mirror. I didn't want to hang out. But when I didn't hang out with somebody, I felt alone. I felt like an outcast. So that's where the people-pleasing started, at a young age. And you know, like I said, it was one of my biggest character defects. And you know, when I got to the sixth step and I'm working on character defects, you know, I'm like, I'm working on all this stuff. I'm almost ready to leave my wife because she's not changing. She's not doing the things that I expect out of her. And I'm getting pissed off and everything. And my grand sponsor at the time, and I'm sharing with him about this. He goes, "Who's in recovery?" "What do you mean?" He goes, "Who's in recovery?" I said, "I am." He goes, "Then work your program. Leave her the fuck alone." He goes, "How many times she tried to change you?" I didn't want to answer that one. He goes, "How many times she tried to get you to do shit that you didn't want to do, and what did you do?" Fuck. I went and got high. I get pissed at her, I go get high. He goes, "Focus on your recovery. Focus on you changing." He goes, "I guarantee you, when you start changing, she'll start changing." He goes, "But don't get upset if it's not the changes that you expect." He goes, "Don't put an expectation on it." Shit. I didn't want... Like I said, sometimes I got to be told things that I don't want to hear. And then my seventh step, just try not to act out on these character defects when they pop up. You know, I work on a lot of character defects. I still work on them today. It's like putting them up here on a shelf. I got that one taken care of. Got that one taken care of. And what I'm not realizing is when I'm putting one up, I'm usually knocking two down. And until they become relevant in my life in that day, I don't realize it. So I'm constantly working on some type of character defect. Just trying to get better with it. And I ask God, please help me with this. Put somebody in my life that can guide me through this. Sometimes it's right away. Sometimes I got to go through it to learn. You know, we go through a lot of things and we need to learn a lesson. Sometimes we have to feel that pain. Sometimes we go through these things and you'll walk into a meeting, you'll sit down, and that speaker will say two words, and you'll be going, "Shit, there's the answer. They told me when I got here, take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth." And it's still true today. When I come into a meeting, I sit and I listen. Are there speakers that I've heard 1,000 times? Yeah, but I still pay attention. Because something they may say, I might not need that day, that week, that month. But something they say might strike something and I need it down the road. And I know who to go to. "Hey, I heard you share about this about a month ago. I'm going through this. How'd you get through it?" Came to my eighth step. I think I blew that step more out of proportion than I did the fourth. Because first thing I thought, ain't nobody going to want to hear me apologize for all the bullshit I did. And I wouldn't do it. My sponsor's like, "Why won't you write on this?" I said, "Because ain't nobody want to hear my shit with that." He goes, "It's you ain't saying it to nobody." He goes, "All you're doing is making a list." Still, simplicity. Being up in my head, thinking I'm trying to do it my way. I'm jumping ahead a step. I'm already thinking about 9 and I'm not even there. You know, I got through the 8th step. I made this list. Felt like writing a book. And go over with my sponsor. He goes, "Take that out, take that out, take that out." I'm going to make amends to people that might shoot my ass. Or do some really bad bodily harm for some dumb shit that I did when I was high. Thank God for a sponsor to be able to say, "Hey, these are things that you're not going to do." I'll let you know how we're going to go about this. But in my ninth step, you know, one of the biggest amends that I had started making was the day I walked into Narcotics Anonymous, raised my hand and said, I'm an addict. My name's Conrad. The day I surrendered to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, to this process, that I was going to try to do it to the best of my ability, was the first big amends that I made. And to this day, I still continue to make that amends. I wake up every morning. I thank God for allowing me to wake up. I use him all day long. When I get pissed off, I say the serenity prayer. God, please help me. I need to start this day over. That was a cool thing that I heard earlier in recovery. I can start my day over anytime I want. There's been days where I've started my days over 50 to 100 times. But I got through it. I didn't get high. I didn't do nothing stupid. Thank God. And to be able to make amends to my wife, to become the husband that she deserves, to be the father to both of my daughters. They deserve to have a good father. Making amends to my parents. I can relate to Rachel with her mom. My dad passed away from cancer. I can remember sitting out in his backyard, making that amends with him. And him crying and hugging me and saying he loved me. My father was not like that. My very first year, my father only came to one of my anniversaries, and that was my first year. And it's the first time I've ever seen that man cry in public. Around people that he did not know. And it tore me up. But I made my amends to him, and I told him that I would do the best I can to take care of my mother. And I make that amends to this day, every day, because I take care of my mother. I do everything for her that she needs to have done. We talk about our lives getting better, and I don't know how you can't say that taking care of a parent that took care of you for so long is not something better. It's a blessing. It's a gift. And you know, in my 10th step, if I do something wrong, this doesn't feel right. Immediately. I can remember in my early recovery, I said something in my home group about one of my home group members, and as soon as it came out of my mouth, I felt like a piece of shit. And I had to talk to my sponsor and a couple of people. I said, how do I get rid of this? Making amends. And I wasn't even nowhere near the 10th step at that time. But I had that first hit of what it feels like to know you've wronged somebody and they don't even have to be in a room. And I had to pull this person aside the following week when they came to the home group and said, look, I said something last week when you weren't here and it was detrimental to your character. I said, and I'm sorry. And I told them what I said. They said they forgive me and they loved me and they gave me a hug. And they were proud that I was honest and open-minded enough to come and tell them. You know, 11th step, prayer and meditation. Meditation can be a bitch. God, it can be a bitch. But a lot of times, just what I like to do to meditate is I go fishing. And I go, I'll go with a friend of mine a lot of times, but we'll separate. And this is like both of the things we love to do, me and my buddy. We'll sit there and just turn everything off and just meditate. It's great. But I still practice it. I can do it for maybe about 15, maybe 20 minutes. It's as far as I can get, and then my brain kicks back on. There's about 9 different directions it wants to go in. It's an ongoing process. And my 12th step, to give away what was so freely given to me. There's a few men and women in this group that I know from the time I got here. Thank you for being here. Thank you for staying to let me know that no matter what, this is where I need to be. I can't do this without you. One of the biggest things my first sponsor told me, he says, when you do the steps, he goes, the main thing I want you to do is to learn how to live the spiritual principles in your life. And he goes, if you have a problem, he goes, raise your hand and ask. Ask, why am I having so much trouble with this? He goes, I guarantee you, there'll be 5 or 6 people that have been here will come up to you and go, I've been through that, and this is how we do it. So, I want to thank this committee for asking me to come out and share my experience, strengths, and hope. I love everybody here. I'll keep coming back.
Thanks for sharing.